So we were hoping that you could chat for just a couple of minutes. In your oral history at length, you talked about kind of the things that help to stimulate innovation and things that can hinder innovation. And I was wondering, or we were all wondering, if you had advice for kind of a young chemist starting their career, particularly in industry where there can be so many hurdles. What advice would you give someone who wants to be really innovative, who has a lot of good ideas? How would you tell them to go about trying to make them happen?
Okay. Well, I've been reading the book called The Innovation Factory about Bell Labs, and some of the things in there are really applicable to all the inventions that we did at DuPont and innovation. I was considered to be innovative. I was also considered to be a pain in the neck because I had ideas that didn't exactly conform to the status quo. And one of the problems is that innovators have fights on their hand because they want to do something new and they want to do it differently. And the people whom you have to persuade have to back risky things that may or may not pan out, and then they're going to get caught and say, "No, you backed the wrong horse." So innovation has to do a lot with persistence. I was pretty persistent, as you can see. I worked for 40-odd years on the same thing, and ultimately I was rewarded for it, but on the way there, there were a lot of pitfalls. I was fortunate that I started as a dye chemist, and I had one boss, his name was Howard Smith, who said, "Rolf, why don't you find out, I give you a project called New Dye Uses." And I said, "What does that mean?" He said, "Whatever you want it to mean." And I said, "Doesn't mean we have to find new dyes to be used, or new uses for dyes." He said, "Your choice." But that sort of sounded interesting, and then he said, "Well, why don't you go out with some of the dye salesmen and talk to people about what they want?" Now, you have to remember, 60 years ago, there wasn't quite the plastics business that there is now, and there were a lot of things that were different than they are now. But I was fortunate. I managed to get involved with people who wanted new things. And they weren't necessarily chemists. As a matter of fact, they didn't know any chemistry, but they said, maybe there's a chemist at DuPont who can give us some samples that we could demonstrate something. So I was fortunate. I got out of the laboratory and got to talk to people who were interested in new technology, but frequently that technology wasn't exactly big. I mean, at DuPont, we used to say, "Well, if it's not a $10 million business, it's not worth pursuing." But unfortunately, it's very hard to think of many $11 million businesses. So I was sort of put in a situation where I had ample technicians and ample opportunities to go out and talk to salespeople or their customers and try to do new things. And at that time, DuPont had something called development conferences, where we would invite another company to come, and they would tell us what they would want. But usually, this was attended by bosses, and then they'd tell somebody, "Oh, that's what they want," but nobody did anything about it. And my situation, when I went, I actually made contacts with the people from the other companies, and we developed novel ways of dyeing anodized aluminum, for instance. And so this got me into a lot of background in the dye business. And I think I was sort of happy to get away from the laboratory. I mean, I really didn't enjoy synthesizing dyes all that much. I enjoyed finding things to do with those dyes that hadn't been done before. And so by the time I had been in a dye chemist in the dye field for about 10 years, I was beginning to have ideas on things that weren't available. And the Dylux was a wonderful example. somebody said, oh, we ought to do something about photochromic materials for butycide. So I didn't just leave it there. I went and I got some butycide and I got some materials and we tried to do it. And then when that didn't work out, we understood why the chemistry was the way it was. And we found other things to do with this chemistry. As a matter of fact, we got into hot water because we had told our bosses we had great opportunities in the photochromic field. And then when we realized there was something else we could do with the photochromic materials that wasn't photochromism but forming permanent color, they said, but you told us you were going to do that. And I said, yeah, but this is a, look at it this way, a photochromic material we'd be testing for 20 years and none of us would be around when we're commercial. Whereas if you had, and then you could reuse it over and over again, whereas if we made printed images, they'd be thrown away after a few days and we'd have sell more and more material. So in turn, we managed to persuade people of that. It involved persistence. Then another thing which I think is important for innovation is you talk to people. In the Innovation Factory book, the author says, Bell Labs was in one big building, and the guy who started it wanted everybody to use the same elevator so people would bump into each other on their way to work or home and talk about what they were doing. And I was a great talker, but I found friends who were interested in what I was doing. I remember
There is the guy from Ehrlich, and there was in Keller, he has to go in the basement, and he has to spray around here. Can you have a break for 10 minutes? And
Well, I think, depending on what you guys need us to do, I think we're just about to wrap up once you finish talking about
information. You can go.
So
give me another 3 or 4 minutes.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, we certainly don't want to be in your way. But
oh, you're not in my way.
Start back up and
you can
pick up. We're talking about how he's chatty.
Well, for instance, one time I met a man at a party who worked in a laboratory that was maybe 100 yards from where, or less than that, where our lab was.
I think there is a mouse trap. Maybe you have to reveal the mouse trap.
Well, you could edit that out. Anyway, we talked at a cocktail party. We talked about what we were doing research-wise. Like I said, oh, that's interesting. Why don't you come to our lab and give a talk about it? And I went over there a couple of days later and gave a talk. And all of a sudden, we had three or four scientists to volunteer to work on what we were working on just to help us. So in the 60s, there were DuPont people all over, and they represented different disciplines, and they were all, and I think we were all interested in what we were doing. So that's another aspect of innovation. Another thing which the man on the Innovation Factory says is important when you innovate is that you have time to do this, that you can't do things on a daily or weekly innovation basis. You have to learn the technology that you're trying to do something with, and you need funding that goes over a longer period of time. And so when you're in a situation where somebody says, well, this project has 3 months, that's not enough time. The part of the DuPont company that I worked for was fortunate because we had two businesses that made money no matter what we did. One was tetraethyl lead, and the other one was Freon. So our department was fairly wealthy, and they could afford to undertake long-term projects. So that's another thing. It takes time to develop ideas. You have to know what has been done before you can surpass. And so the question is, do we really give people enough time to understand the businesses that they're supposed to innovate in? So those are some of my ideas, but it's persistence, and I think it would be nice if we had a reward system that encourages people for being persistent and for being pains in the neck.
Thank you.
to have their way. But it doesn't work out that way. I mean, I did all right. I was sort of fortunate. So.
Great, great. Well, I think that was perfect. That was exactly what we were hoping for.